This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Well, hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornborough, and I'm joined today by David Hughes, also known as Farmer Dave. And he's doing some real cool stuff down there in Tennessee. He's growing nut trees. And nut trees is something we've talked a little bit about here and there on the podcast, but never done a whole episode on it, I don't think. So I'm real excited to talk to Dave about all the cool stuff he's doing down there. But Dave, welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Before we just really start talking about what you're doing there, let's talk a little bit about what got you there. What got you into growing trees and doing market gardening and, you know, and doing it for the market and the things you're doing there? I mean, done this all your life, or is you just jump into this when you're a young man, or what?
Well, I've gardened since I was 10 or 12 years old. Always had a fascination with it. I have a my great grandparents were farmers. My great grandfather had 40 acres in East Nashville, which, okay, you know, if I had that now, I wouldn't have to be talking to you or doing anything else. But the small farming lifestyle has been, you know, in my stream of thinking since I was very, very young. So I wanted to do it a long time ago, and I had a good friend that basically threw me under the bus, and we got started doing produce and selling produce to restaurants. And along the way, I met a lot of very interesting people, and some of those people got me interested in the nut trees and some of the native fruit trees and things like that. And, you know, I learned about things, but like most people, I didn't actually see some of these things for a long time.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I was grafting and selling pecan trees before I ever actually saw some of the improved hickory nuts in person. And I happened to have a customer come by one day, and he had he wanted some pecan trees, and he told me that he had some 40-year-old grafted hickory trees at his place up here about 40 miles up the road. So I went to see him, and you know, the nuts were there, and I picked up a few nuts, and you know, they're hickory nuts. I mean, everybody thinks about hickory nuts and road gravel in the same conversation. You know, they're hard. You got to have a sledgehammer and an anvil, and on and on and on. So I bring home these were Fayette Shellbark hickories. So these are big as a walnut. Okay.
Really? Okay.
And you know, I've got some wild ones back here behind the house, and I mean, they are just crazy hard. And I bring these nuts home, and I'm told my wife, I'm going to go crack some of these nuts. So I go out and I get my big black walnut, you know, nutcracker, and I heave down on one of them and squash that dude flat as a pancake. I mean, just flat. I mean, just mashed it. And I was like, that's not the way that's supposed to work. That's, you know, this is really weird. So
yeah,
I get another one. I kind of ease down on it, and it pops, and the two sides come off that nut, and there's two whole halves inside this hickory nut.
Wow.
And, you know, most people that have cracked hickory nuts, they're getting little teeny tiny pieces out of those hickory nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
So these two whole halves out of this thing, and they're big as a quarter, bigger than a quarter.
Wow.
And then he's got some shagbark hickories there, and I do the same thing with those, and they pop out in whole halves. And, you know, this was new because I was already doing the pecans. And I was doing pecans for northern areas because nobody's doing pecans for northern.
Yeah.
Pecans are native all the way up to Iowa and out into Nebraska. I mean, up there's a little pocket in southwestern Ohio where the Native Americans planted pecans up there. And they're cold hardy. I mean, there's some commercial plantings going in north of Indianapolis.
Yep.
This is a thing that nobody really knows can be a thing.
I planted two of them in Indiana, and I planted two of them on my property 2 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's talked about a little bit and whatnot, but trying to find all the varieties, trying to find the stuff that's appropriate, the right rootstock so that they don't freeze in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. All of those things are, you know, that's what I wanted to do. And I wanted to do it for people who weren't really planning to plant 100 acres of them. Somebody wanted two or four or 10 or whatever. That was what I wanted to do. That was the people that were not being served out in the country. So
I can't get past these hickory nuts you're talking about. How in the world did they get them to that point? I mean, is this something you're selling now?
That's something I'm selling now. I've got way too many. there's probably 30 varieties of hickories in my catalog now.
Is that right?
These have been collected since the late 1800s.
These were just
wild nuts. I mean, I guess if we were doing tomatoes, they would be considered heirlooms.
Yeah.
They're just wild nuts that were selected for their genetic characteristics. Basically, these nuts have an internal architecture that's smooth. So there's not a lot of those ridges that go into the nut meat to entrap the nut meats. So they've got this smooth internal architecture. Usually they're kind of flat, and the shells are a fraction of the thickness of a normal hickory nut.
Okay.
And you can walk the woods most of your life and never find one of these.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in the woods up here, and I've never seen anything like that. They were pretty small here, and pretty much just squirrel food and whatever else wants to eat them, deer and whatever. You know, we don't really do much with them other than that. Well,
the first named shagbark hickory was one called Hale's Paper Shell, and it was named in the late 1800s. Came out of New England. And it's flat, but it's almost square.
Hmm.
It's thick. It's bigger than a normal hickory nut, and it's got a super thin shell on it, not thin enough to crack by hand, but not far.
That's interesting.
You know, the really important part about that is you can grow those much further north than you can pecans and be successful.
Yeah.
So there's quite a group of nut growers in New England and in the upper Midwest that are doing hickories, and they take a little bit longer than pecans to make, but not that much longer.
I'm curious about how long it takes for pecans to mature enough to start growing some nuts. I mean, I figured it's going to be a long time before I ever seen one, if ever. So I'm kind of curious about that.
are your trees grafted, or are your trees just seedlings?
They were grown from seed. I bought them from a local nursery here, but yeah, they're not grafted.
Okay. Well, seedling pecans take 15 to 20 years.
Yeah. So, I think they were a couple years old maybe a year or two old when I planted them. I've had them for a couple of years. They're still only about 8 feet tall. They got a long way to go.
Well, I planted pecans here in 2012, and in 2017 I saw that there were some nuts, you know, on there, just a few. And that fall I went down and I harvested my nuts, and I had a handful. I mean, I had a handful. I brought them up the house and I told my wife, I said, we have enough nuts from our orchard to make a brownie. Not a batch of brownies, just a brownie.
Brownie. Okay?
And we had a few nuts. The next year we had more. The third year we got froze out. We had a late freeze and we didn't get anything that year. The trees actually bloomed a second time, but they didn't have enough time to actually ripen the nuts. So we didn't get any of that year. Now this is 11 years now they've been in the ground. And I've got a couple of trees down there that are going to have a bunch of nuts on them.
Really?
A bunch of nuts on them this year.
Okay, so interesting.
It's generally the commercial guys say that you're at full production in 20 years. And that's the beginning of full production. The average, an average mature pecan tree is going to produce about 100 pounds of nuts a year.
Yeah.
And that's an average because some years they're going to produce a whole lot more than that. And some years they're going to produce less than that. So, but that average of 100 pounds a year is pretty average.
Well, it's a long game for sure, but it sounds like it has a really good payoff.
It does. And it's, you know, compared to other fruit trees, if you choose the right varieties, if you choose some scab resistant varieties, they're a way of a lot easier than an apple tree or a peach tree or something like that.
I mean, I just did an interview with a lady about fruit trees and we were just talking about all the, you know, problems with diseases and insects and all the things, you know, fruit trees are complicated.
Fruit trees are the pathway to depression. I mean,
I don't feel quite that way about it. I mean, I enjoy my fruit, but they do take a little bit of work, and I've not done anything to the nut trees I've planted. Let's put it that way.
Well, I mean, nut trees need a little bit of pruning, and you know, if you're going to treat them as a crop and actually try to make money from them, you would be in benefit to spray them periodically. But you know, if you're just growing them for yourself, for your own home use, to feed the pigs, I mean, whatever, you don't have to do anything.
Well, let's talk about that. It's like, you know, nut trees for the homestead. I mean, what are some reasons to grow some nut trees for the homestead?
Well, I mean, lots of people like to eat them.
Mm-hmm.
They're a familiar crop. You know, when you get over into chestnuts, in Spain and Portugal, they fatten pigs on chestnuts, and that pork is actually, there's a couple of farms over there that use chestnut fattened pork for the king over there. I mean, that is a premium product over there. They're an efficient use of resources. If you've got livestock, the livestock needs shade. Why not have shade that produces a crop?
Sure.
So, you know, you can have a tree out there that doesn't do anything, or you can have a tree out there that's, you know, that produces a crop for you or for the stock. Hazelnuts, you can use every piece of the hazelnut. You can use the branches for crafts and things like that. You can use the nuts, you can use the shells, you can press the not quality nuts for oil and make biodiesel out of it. I mean,
is that right? Didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, there's all of these things are, you know, you know, if you're going to do something, you want a little income on the farm and you pick up the pecans, you're not, you know, you're picking up a commodity, but if you're not in South Georgia or Texas, you are not in the commodity market. As a matter of fact, you have something that nobody else has in the local market. And, you know, if you've never really had a fresh pecan, you've never had a good pecan, because the ones you get at the store are usually kind of dried out and torchy and not just, they kind of have a weird aftertaste. And a fresh pecan has got all the oils are still good in it, and they're just really, really good.
Okay, now you got me interested, because I don't think I've ever had a fresh pecan. So now I'm really thinking,
you need to find one. You need to find, there's several guys in Indiana that have got pecans growing. You need to find one of those guys and crack one, because they are, it's a whole new experience.
Well, you mentioned hazelnut. Now that's, and I think of like a shorter term nut that you can grow and get something from a lot quicker. I mean, I've got some hazelnut out here to plant just a few years ago, and they're in production. They're doing things. I mean, I'm not getting tons and tons from them, but, and they tend to spread and get big, and, you know, and there's just a lot there. I mean, I use a lot of the wood for things, but I mean, it's a lot quicker of a process with hazelnuts.
That's a quicker process, especially to full production. So, you know, you get a few nuts in 4 or 5 years, and then, you know, in 10 years, you're at full production. I mean, you're cranking, you know, you're really doing that. And they're also, well, they require a little bit of management. After about 15 or 20 years, you need to coppice them back, cut them back to the ground, and have them resprout. They will begin to go backwards a little bit in productivity, but when you do that, they come right back.
Yeah.
So, right. But yes, hazelnuts are, in the East, we have wild hazelnuts here that are little teeny tiny things. And, you know, that's a little bit of a turnoff for, you know, commercial use or whatever. But Rutgers University has released 4 or 5 varieties now that are commercial sized nuts that are resistant to Eastern filbert blight. So you can grow those and have a, you know, have a decent size hazelnut anywhere in the Eastern United States.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a game changer. The Oregon State produced some that were supposed to be blight resistant, and they were pretty blight resistant where there wasn't any blight.
Wow.
When you brought them over here where there was a pretty good amount of blight, they're resistant, but they're not immune.
Yeah.
So, but.
Well, you mentioned chestnuts also. Do you have, are you growing chestnuts? Are you selling chestnuts also, or just?
I do seedling chestnuts. Grafting chestnuts is a little bit problematic because most of the chestnuts in the world are now hybrids of some sort.
That's what I was going to ask you. What was your thoughts about the hybrids and how what the future is for that kind of?
Well, as far as the Chinese hybrids, there's Chinese, Japanese, European, and American. Chestnut trees are pretty loosey-goosey when it comes to pollination. They all pollinate each other. Okay. And they, those hybrids, they have a great deal of genetic variability. And when you begin to hybridize them, that genetic variability makes for incompatibilities in between varieties. So, you wind up, if you can graft them and they'll take and they'll grow for a while, and then they have what's called latent incompatibility, which is where the graft union fails. They just can't, they quit feeding the graft.
Okay.
And so you can have a tree that's up and, you know, into production, and you're just thrilled to death with it, and it turns yellow and dies.
Okay. I know a lot of people, especially in the world of permaculture, a lot of folks are, you know, they're looking to the chestnut and they're looking for like silvopasture opportunities. You know, they can grow them, let the nuts drop, feed hogs, run their hogs through there and do that. And then, you know, I didn't know if you thought that was a good plan, or if there were better nuts for that maybe, or.
That is a great plan. That is a really good plan. That is probably the easiest thing to do. If you're going to run it, going to run hogs in there with them, you don't have to do anything to the chestnuts. You don't have to pick them up. You don't have to fool with the burrs. You don't have to do anything. You
can just
let them drop and let the pigs harvest them for you and turn them into wonderful, you know, ham and bacon. So,
That's favorite kind of nuts are the ones that turn into bacon. Yeah.
But it's a high carbohydrate nut. It packs the fat on. Deer hunters love them. Deer absolutely love those nuts. A deer will walk up to that burr and spread her toes out there and pop that thing, and that nut will go flying out and she'll run over and eat it.
They got it cleared out, don't they?
They do. They do.
Wow.
But yes, chestnuts are the The American chestnut is still, they're still working on that. They make some progress and then they have some setbacks. Of course, we've got a genetically modified one that they're trying to release now. And even when they get it released, it's going to be years and years and years before it's available to the general public. That one is, they're really hoping to reestablish it as a somewhat native tree in native habitats.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So the other thing about American chestnuts that you know, a lot of people want them and they think about them just like the Chinese chestnut. An American chestnut takes 20 or 30 years before it blooms. So you can, it's just like the native pecan that you planted. It's got a long juvenile period. And, you know, the tree may be 60 feet tall before it ever makes a flower. So it's not a fast turnaround. The Chinese chestnut, the reason that it is so, you know, so good for permaculture and for all this is the Chinese have had that tree in cultivation for 6,000 years. So they have selected for early maturity and for nut size and for disease resistance for a long, long time. So it is a very, I mean, if you can domesticate a tree, Chinese chestnuts are the closest thing you've got to a domesticated tree.
Mm-hmm.
All the others are just mainly wild selections.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the USDA does breeding on pecans, and there's a whole lot of releases that they put out there that are, you know, made by selected crosses, but it's still, you know, they make 1,000 crosses and they plant 1,000 seeds and they pick one every 4 or 5 years that's good. Wow. So it's not a magical formula.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes you really appreciate the work that goes into that. I mean, knowing how long it takes to really get that right. I mean, that's a process you got to appreciate the work that goes into that and the dedication that goes into that, because that, like I said earlier, that's a long game. That's a really long game when it comes down to really, you know, fine tuning, you know, those trees.
Oh yeah. They've got trees that crosses were made in the 70s that they're still testing. So, you know, that's, I've got a good friend that worked in some apple breeding one time, and I asked him, you know, how long till you can release an apple variety? He said, to be sure it's a good one, he said 30 or 40 years.
Hmm.
I was like, but, you know, some of these guys are releasing stuff after 2 or 3 years. And he said, they don't have any idea what they got. He said, they haven't had enough time to test drought and flood and hot and cold and insect and disease, all of the variables that can affect it. So that's why, you know, you've got all these varieties of apples out there that don't really do as well as they say they're going to do.
Yeah.
And pecans have suffered from that, too. Don't get me wrong. USDA has released some pretty big duds. but they, you know, I'll tell you about one that the first one they released was one named Barton. And Barton came out, it's a great big nut, disease resistant, just you know, in the first few years, it was great. And as it gets older, it's so precocious, it sets so many nuts that it can't fill them up. It doesn't have enough energy to fill
all those shells, huh?
So you have these half-filled nuts and just, you know, thousands and thousands of them on these trees. Well, then the next year, it doesn't have any nuts at all. Puts all its energy into this. And it gets into what they call alternate bearing. So you have a huge crop that it can't fill, and then you have nothing. And then you have another huge crop that it can't fill, and it has nothing.
Wow.
Well, over the years, they have started doing what they call crop thinning, where they go in August or, August, usually August, and shake the tree and shake about half the nuts off the tree. And a lot of the new commercial varieties, that's what they have to do. They have to go in there and shake the tree and shake the nuts off the tree. But Barton has been thrown in the wastebasket of pecan breeding so long ago that nobody has done that with Barton. So we don't know for sure, but I had a buddy in Indiana. He's passed away now, but I had a buddy in Indiana that had Barton in his orchard, and he was shaking them, and he said it was the best nut in his orchard.
Is that right?
So, there's so many variables anytime you're planting a tree crop. How much do you want to put into it? You know, do you just want something that you plant and walk away from and it makes nuts no matter what? Or do you want something that you actually work at to maximize production? And, it's like a tomato crop. I mean, you can plant tomatoes and you'll get tomatoes if you don't ever touch them again. Or you can plant tomatoes and you can sucker them and prune them and tie them and stake them and thin them.
Yeah.
And you can get the best tomato ever. And, where's the happy medium in there? I mean,
When I think about nut trees, though, I mean, the commitment of time of how long it's going to take and that's just a lot of your life that you're spending waiting on some trees to produce. You really don't want to make big mistakes in the beginning or get the wrong trees. I mean, it's really nice to get something, I think, that's kind of proven itself over time already, so you know kind of what you have coming,
and that is very true. And I get people call all the time and go, oh, that's a long time. Well, time's going to pass whether you plant a tree
your way. That's right.
So if you think you want to have a nut tree, you probably ought to go to planting one, because 20 years from now, The pecan varieties, I told you that I started into the produce business and whatnot. I already knew about these pecan varieties, but I didn't really know what to do with them. I really didn't know, did I have space? Same conversation we're having now. Oh, that's a lot of time. Oh, I'm spending money now, and I gotta wait a long time before I get anything back, and yada yada yada. Mm-hmm. That's 40 years ago. I'd have had in full production right now. Absolutely. Yeah. I could retire from the nut trees I planted. Okay.
Yeah.
But no, I put it off and put it off and put it off. And I can't stand here and tell people, that how they ought to do things, because I've done the very same thing they're thinking. So,
yeah.
But yeah, those wonderful varieties, the nut grower guys are pretty quiet, and it's kind of a, it's just a handful of them that all know about this stuff. And, they're most of them, by the time their trees start producing and they can really get excited about it, they're all old. Okay. And yeah. They're most of the guys, don't really start planting trees until they're in their 40s or 50s.
Yeah, that's this guy right here. That's me. I mean,
they're all old by the time the stuff really kicks in, they're not out beating the drum to do this stuff. But there is right now, there's a pretty good group of guys out there, especially in the permaculture movement. Mm-hmm. Who are hooping and hollering about this stuff. I mean, they're really, really into it. And they've got good information. They have hunted down these old orchards and found these old trees. And, they're seeing things. They're showing, hey, look, this is what these trees will do. You remember that hickory nut I told you about that cracked out in old halves? you know, you can't walk under that tree when the nuts fall because there's so many on the ground. It's like walking on bowling balls down there. I mean, they're just, the ground is solid nuts.
Wow.
So it's a hugely productive tree.
Yeah. But it's 25 year tree, right? I mean, it's 25 years for you to see that, right?
Yeah. It's going to be 15 or 20 years before you see that. But you know,
And I'm just reminding our listeners, I'm like, if you're going to do this, do it now. I mean, you know, put it off for 5 years from now.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a gentleman come by here 7 or 8 years ago who was a market gardener over in North Carolina. And he had a piece of ground. It was down in kind of a creek bottom, a little too wet to farm. And he bought 25 or 30 pecan trees. And I talked to the guys when they come by and pick up stuff. So what are you going to do with these? And he said, well, one of these days I'm going to get too old to do this. And I need something that I can continue to sell at the market. And he was young. He was in his late 20s, early 30s, somewhere in there. And I thought about him quite a lot. I mean, 20 years from now, when you're tired of crawling around and pulling turnips, you're going to have pecans that you can pick up. You know, you can get you a nut wizard and pick them up standing up. So, you know, it's a good plant. It's a really good plant.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, when I think about growing them on the homestead, I just love them because I practice permaculture here, you know, and I think of them as the perfect overstory tree, even better than a fruit tree, really. I mean, you can grow some fruit trees under them.
Well, to get the most production out of a nut tree or fruit tree, anything, there's a real simple formula. Sunlight equals flowers equals fruit. Okay. So when you're planting your trees, you know, everybody wants to put as many trees in as small a space as possible. But we need to be planting a savanna, not a forest.
Hmm.
Okay. A savanna has space between the trees, which means sunlight gets to the ground. So you get sunlight to the ground, and now you can have, you know, you can raise for the first 30 or so years, you can raise a crop in between your pecan trees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people plant, well, they in farm areas, they plant soybeans in between them until they get.
Oh, yeah, that alley cropping is huge like that. I mean, you're running the trees and then rows of whatever else in between them. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what you really want. You want that space in between the trees so that you can have sunlight all the way to the ground.
Yeah.
You want that pecan tree to make nuts all the way down where you could look at them standing on the ground.
Yeah.
You don't need them all up in the top of that tree. you know, those are harder to get to.
You just got away from the fall, right?
Yeah. So yeah, it's that whole concept of permaculture and interplanting and having layers, you know, that's what a forest is. It's layers. There's a story, a mid story, and an overstory. And that's what you want to have. And this works really, really well for that.
Yeah, I know that there's a lot of folks that are running orchards and they just alternate, you know, there's not a spread of disease. It creates more, you know, just resistance in a lot of ways, insects and disease, fungal issues and things like that by alternating trees and, you know, and not having just like a cluster of the same thing. I don't know how you feel about that, but it seems to work really well for folks who practice that.
It is a good way to do it. And it also helps break up the disease cycle.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've got a lot of people like there's a hybrid between a hickory and a pecan called a hickon.
Never heard of that.
Yeah, it's shag barks and shell barks both will pollinate and will get pollinated by pecans.
Wow.
And it creates a hybrid that has the scent of a hickory nut, but the shell like a pecan. So it's a thin shell. Some of them look like hickory nuts. Some look like pecans. Just depends on which way the cross went. But they're an absolute magnet for pecan weevils. Okay. So pecan weevil is actually that insect actually evolved with the hickory nut. and it prefers hickory nuts. But if you give it something that has a shell on it like a pecan and smells like a hickory nut, they'll all go to that tree. And that is one that could be used as a trap crop for people who have a problem with that insect. And if you run chickens underneath it, they'll eat all the weevils when they come out of the shells.
There you go. Yeah, that's brilliant. Okay? Yeah.
So, you know, you can get protein that way. That's one of the insects. There's a chestnut weevil that's a problem with chestnuts, and running chickens and hogs under there takes care of that problem.
Yeah.
They'll get about 99% of those. And that little insect crawls up the side of the tree. Very few of them fly. So those weevils crawl up the tree. So you can put a trap on the tree and catch those weevils and stop that process also. But those hickons, a lot of people want to grow them, and they're a very interesting tree. The nuts have a good flavor, but they are a bug magnet. So,
well, it sounds like that again, you turn a problem into a solution in some ways. I mean, you're feeding some livestock with it while you're dealing with a problem, but yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is really the way to solve most of the problems in agriculture is mm-hmm. find a way to make it into a positive rather than a negative.
It's not take a poison and just spray it. That's not the solution.
Well, it is a solution, but it's not necessarily the only solution. And certainly,
I would argue it's not the right solution, but yeah, my water supply says so, right?
Well, everybody has their reasons for doing what they do.
I understand. Yeah.
So, you know, I can't just stand here and say that everybody that sprays is bad and everybody that doesn't spray is good. I've been to both kinds of places and I've seen good and bad at both kinds of places.
So, I would argue that there's better ways. There's more environmentally friendly ways, but there are also ways that take a lot more commitment. They take a lot more time. They take a lot more work sometimes to make it work. And I get that. I understand that.
I'll tell you I know a guy who tried to grow apples organically there in Indiana. Tough. And it was an utter and total failure. And he'll admit that it was an utter and total failure. But in the process, he learned the pest intimately. I mean, every insect, every fungus, every disease, everything that could go wrong. He saw everything that could go wrong with an apple tree. And when he converted over to conventional, you know, to spraying his trees, he was able to grow a nearly perfect crop with 10% of what Purdue University said you needed to spray.
Mm.
And that is one thing, I guess, about pesticides, whether they're organic pesticides or not organic pesticides. If you don't know when to spray it, you're just wasting your time.
Yeah.
So if the insect is not there, there's no need to spray it.
Yeah.
If the disease is not active, there's no need to spray it. So, spraying three times a year and getting 90% coverage is a heck of a lot better than spraying every 10 days.
Yeah.
Just because.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. There's, I mean, even if you are going that route, there are better ways to do it besides it just being better for the environment, think of the money he saves doing that. Well, yeah.
The money you save, the environmental impact, all of those sorts of things, we need to get really in tune with what we're growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're really in tune with what you're growing, then organic, not organic, whatever, you can actually solve the problem rather than just blast away at it and hope for the best.
Yep, I agree.
And nobody needs to blast away and hope for the best. That's just not good management.
Yeah. Even in organic methods, if you're not doing it right, the chances of you accomplishing anything with it are just, you know, not very good. You got to do it. You got to know what you're dealing with, when to deal with it, like you said, and treat it, you know, in the best way you can, even with organic methods. I mean, otherwise you're sure to get defeated. I mean, if you just, like you said, blast away with it, you can throw diatomaceous earth and, you know, neem oil on it all you want, but if there's nothing there at that time when you're doing it, it ain't gonna do any good. Right.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, if you want to put diatomaceous earth on the squash bugs before they get your squash, they have to be there. Okay? Yeah. You know, having it there and letting it get rained on and they show up the next day doesn't help at all.
That's right.
So, yeah. You know, getting your soil fertility right. A lot of times diseases and insects can be solved by having really, really healthy trees.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the pecan scab is a disease problem of some pecans. And the Noble Institute out in Oklahoma has a low spray orchard over there where they don't spray, I don't guess they spray anything in there. And they had some scab on some varieties and they were trying to figure out how to manage it. And they found that if they rake up all the leaf litter and burn it every winter, they don't have near the scab as if they just let it lay there and deteriorate. Yeah. So just hygiene, just going through there and cleaning up all the old holes and all of the leaves and putting them in a windrow and burning them. Now you're converting that organic matter over into carbon and you're killing all of the spores that were on that material.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you're putting potash back in the soil, you're putting phosphorus back in the soil, and you're getting rid of a disease at the same time.
Yeah.
So a lot of different ways of managing, you know, the orchard floor. If you've got the pigs in there, they're going to eat everything that hits the ground, okay?
And the ground.
And then they're going to turn it all over and bury it all real good.
Yep, yep.
Chickens can do the same thing. I mean, if you leave chickens there long enough, there's not going to be anything left there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, you really got to practice rotational grazing through a silvopasture, and or they can just destroy everything around. Well, that
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. But, you know, there again, timeliness is the thing, you know.
Yeah.
You put the pigs in there at the right time, they go through and churn it all up and eat everything that's there. And you've taken care of diseases and insects and everything else. You put them in there a month too soon and you miss the opportunity. So. Yeah,
sure. Well, you said earlier you were growing for one of the reasons you like to grow the way you're growing is because you want to grow for the smaller homestead, not just these people doing a big commercial business. Mm-hmm. And you really, you know, had a desire to sell to people and help people get these nut trees on their homesteads. What kind of nut trees do you think work really good on a homestead? We talked about a few, I imagine, and it depends on what you're doing, of course. I mean, we've talked about chestnut and hazelnut and hickory and a couple others. Is there anything else that you think would be a good homestead tree?
Well, I don't grow black walnuts here because there's a quarantine on the state of Tennessee over a disease that's about, I don't know, 3.5 hours from here, that's not spreading. But the black walnut grows pretty much throughout the eastern United States and quite a bit in the western United States. And there are the same thin-shelled varieties out there of black walnut as there are of the hickories and pecans.
Is that right?
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Crack out the whole halves, the whole nine yards.
About like an English walnut almost, as far as the
very much so, you know, it still has that bold black walnut flavor.
Hmm.
But you know, really just about anything. We actually now have almonds in our selection, so we've got hardy almonds.
Mm-hmm.
They're good up to zone 5. Mm-hmm. So you know, there's not such a thing as a bad nut tree. What works good depends on what you're doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're doing hogs, then chestnuts and pecans and things like that are probably better. If you're doing market gardening, then, you know, something that's familiar, chestnuts and pecans would probably be a little better. Hazelnuts would be good. You know, shade in a pasture, you know, you've got horses or cattle and you need a little shade. Pecans make a tall tree. Chestnuts in with livestock can be a little bit of an issue because of the burrs. Generally speaking, they're not a problem, but some people are a little iffy about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, black walnuts don't go along good with gardens. They right. have some pretty serious allopathic effects.
Mm-hmm.
The hickories and pecans don't seem to have that same effect. So they can be in pretty close proximity to a garden or whatever and not cause that effect. You know, chickens go everywhere and eat everything. So, you know, they work really well with any kind of tree.
Yeah.
I can't really think of many reasons not to grow them.
Yeah. I guess the big factor would be what you're trying to do with them and where you live. I mean, not everything grows everywhere. So can we talk about that a little bit, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, so pecans are, pecans grow from, they grow well from Southeast Pennsylvania, Lancaster County, that corner,
mm-hmm.
down through the Piedmont of Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, around the Appalachians. They can work in the mountains, but you got to have some short season varieties.
Mm-hmm.
Pecans like hot nights. Okay. They're a heat loving creature. In the Midwest, where the corn grows a foot a day, they love that kind of heat and humidity, okay? If you live someplace where it's, you know, it's 90 degrees in the daytime but 45 degrees at night, pecans are not going to do real well for you.
Michigan.
Michigan, you know, yeah. up in the mountains, that sort yeah. of thing. But, you know, through most of the Midwest, there's actually some pecans. I saw a meeting the other day. There's some pecans even up north of Columbus, Ohio, that are making pecans.
Is that right? Wow.
There's some a part of Southeast Michigan that where they can grow pecans.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's surprising.
There's a little band of Southern Ontario where they grow pecans on the north side of Lake Ontario.
That's really surprising. I can't believe that. That's crazy.
They have quite a few varieties that have been selected to grow up there.
Mm.
They're native up to Iowa. There actually may be a few wild ones in southern Wisconsin.
Is that right?
Wow. Out into Missouri, you know, eastern Kansas, all of Oklahoma and Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California, I have a few people that are growing them in Washington and Oregon. I mean, they grow just about everywhere.
Okay. Wow.
The hickories can grow on up to, you know, up through zone 5, maybe into the edge of zone 4. It would be worth trying them if you really wanted nut trees and wanted to try. You know, pecan tree will live way further north and it'll make nuts.
Yeah.
The survivability of the tree is fine. They'll live just fine.
So it's just a production issue.
It's just the production side. You know, they've got to have that heat to fill out those nuts. That's the thing. And hickory trees don't need as much heat. So they can go ahead and produce in a cooler climate. Black walnuts grow where black walnuts grow. I mean, all over the eastern United States.
Mm-hmm.
The chestnuts are probably to zone 5. The further north you get, you kind of got to be a little careful on those. And the hazelnuts are good to zone 3. So they can grow way up north and down to zone 8. Hazelnuts are not too good in Florida. But, you know, from the, you know, all of the Mid-South and up into New England, they're good.
Yeah, that's definitely turned out to be one of my favorites here on the property. I just like how quick the production is and all the things you can just do with that mm-hmm. plant. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you're doing, you're growing a lot of stuff. What do you got? About 8 or 9? What do you got? 8.5 acres or something like that?
Eight and a half acres.
Yeah, okay. So you're growing a lot. You're not just growing for yourself though. You're growing for market. You're selling. You have a nursery, I think, right? So you're
I've got a nursery here. I've got about 4 acres of pecan trees that are all planted too close together. and I'm growing them for signwood. So I've got, I'll have 50 different varieties of pecans here and probably 30 or 40 varieties of hickory here and 5 or 6 varieties of hazelnut. We'll have almonds here. And then in between them, I'm planting pawpaws and persimmons, for that. And I don't know how many of your homesteaders are actually thinking about selling nuts as far as part of an income stream or whatever. But that is the untapped resource.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
The country. You get some of those Sinchel hickory nuts and you show up at the market and you are the only guy.
Yeah.
You will be the only guy for a long time. And chestnuts are very important to people from Eastern Europe and Asia. It's a very important part of their diet. We don't have a chestnut culture here. Our chestnut culture died with the American chestnut.
Yeah.
So we don't have that in our, it's not in our palate. It's not in our food shed, so to speak. It's just not something that we know what to do with. But it's very important to people from Europe and from Asia. They it's a big part of their diet. And showing up at the farmer's market with fresh chestnuts is going to get you a lot of attention.
Yeah, and that sounds like a great plan. I mean, that sounds like something worth doing, even though it is a long commitment, you know, of getting that plan and getting it going. And, you know, maintenance-wise, I don't know. You're growing, I mean, a little I've been around, I mean, I walking through the woods, I mean, the things grow anyway, but I don't know if you're growing them for market and you're growing them a little closer together, more in rows. I imagine there's a level of work involved in it for sure.
Well, there's, I mean, hey, anything worth doing has work involved. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I have the laziest garden fairies in the world because they don't take care of my stuff. Okay. But having said, yes, there's some work involved with it. It's seasonal work and it's intensive for a day or so. It's not, you're not going to be, I mean, I go through my orchard every 2 or 3 days for relaxation and enjoyment, not because I've got to get out there and break a sweat. You know, I mow the grass under the trees so I could look at the trees. You know, I could let the grass grow all summer long and mow it at the end of the summer if I wanted to. I just happen to like to go down through there and look at them and see what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. My thought is, though, short of maybe if you had some kind of an infestation that moved in or something like that, they're really less work than fruit trees.
Oh, by far they're less work. Way by far. And you know, there's some pruning to do, but nothing like a fruit tree.
Right.
If you're gonna maintain a fruit tree for production, you're gonna prune a bunch out of it every year.
Yeah.
Pecan trees, you're doing corrective pruning. You're cutting things that are crisscrossing inside the tree. You're trying to keep a single leader in the tree. You know, you limb them up so you can get under them with the tractor or walk under them without knocking your hat off or whatever. And otherwise, you just let that do what it wants to. And,
yeah.
You know, you don't have to open them up. I mean, you know, a lot of fruit trees, they open them up, you know, but these things get big. And, you know, without a crane, you're not going to be doing a lot of pruning on those.
And that might depend too on where you're at. If you live in a place that has pretty high humidity or just gets a lot of rainfall and things like that, where you're going to have more moisture, maybe invite some fungal issues in or something like that. You might want to open them up to get more airflow through them. Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, well, stay.
What, What I've noticed with pecan trees is if you make a hole in a year or two, it's going to fill it up.
They, don't like it, huh?
they will figure out a way to, they are very, very good solar collectors.
Yeah.
And if there is sunlight available, they're going to fill the hole and take it in.
Well, that's part of why they produce so well, I guess.
It is. But, you know, the chestnuts, as far as the market is concerned, the chestnuts, the hickories, nobody's got those. Pecans, you know, in Indiana, you got pecan trees, you've got pecans, you take them to a market, if you're allowed to give out samples, it isn't going to be long. Well, there's a guy who was in central Illinois. He's east of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And he's much bigger now than he was. But when he first started, he had about 40 acres of pecans. And he would put an ad right before Thanksgiving in the St. Louis newspaper. And he sold every pecan he could pick up off of 40 acres off his front porch on Saturdays and Sundays between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And he said he'd wake up on Sunday morning before daylight and there'd be a line of cars completely out of sight down the road from his house waiting on him to open up. And so, you know, is there a demand for the product? Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you have, it's like anything else, produce, fruit, whatever, you know, grass-fed beef, grass-fed pork, range poultry, you know, all of that sort of stuff. If you have a quality product and you let people know about it, they will come to you to buy it.
Yeah. But it's that uncommon stuff that seems to really, really do well. Like I think of, you know, of course, nuts, but I think of things like mushrooms. There ain't a lot of people that are selling mushrooms. There's not a lot of people selling, you know, maybe microgreens and things. It was just those things that maybe not everybody's selling. You get everybody selling tomatoes and, you know, a salad mix and this and that. And that's great. Those sell well also, but boy, they'll flock to those things that are hard to find.
Yeah, we tried microgreens and my wife told me if I planted those again, she'd divorce me. So we're not going
to. All right.
But that was before people grew them on the rock wool mats, which is a whole lot nicer than the way we're having to harvest them with a pair of scissors. And I remember we harvested a whole flat and we had had less than an ounce of baby chives. And she said, don't you ever do this again.
Yeah, but boy, they go for a lot of money per ounce. So they're pretty good crop.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you lots of produce stories about fancy restaurants. But that's the other thing is, you know, in my produce business, I've told people my weird stuff sells my ordinary stuff.
Mm, yeah. So
you grow the unusual to get people to come to you and then they buy your ordinary stuff. And that's how that works. You got to have something to differentiate yourself from the herd, so to speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, the mushrooms, you know, pecan wood is really good for smoking meats and things like that. So you can, you can take your trimmings off your trees and cut them up into pieces and people will come and buy the trimmings off your trees. You know, chestnut wood, when the trees get old and mature, chestnut wood is a very fine wood to be used for, you know, furniture and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's
people who grow whole walnut groves just for the tree wood, you know, and they'll just put up a whole row and use it for retirement in 30 or 40 years.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, there's so many ways to skin the cat and I have been exposed to a lot of very interesting people in the food world and you know, that being creative is how you make your way through this thing. I mean, everybody has squash and zucchini in the summertime. Okay. I mean, it's
more than we want sometimes.
It's everywhere. So, you know, can you grow it? Yes. Can you sell it? Maybe. But
maybe you can even give it away.
Yeah. But, you know, we do a lot of unusual things, and that's how we're able to make it. That's why people like us. And
yeah,
and that's kind of it. And the nut trees are one of those unusual things. You know, it's a little niche that you can form, and, you know, people will come to you. The other thing is, and we didn't even touch on this, it's a storable crop.
Yes. Yeah.
Good you point. Pick your pecans, and even in the shell, you can throw them in the freezer and they're good for years.
Yeah.
Thaw them out when you want to crack some of them. If you crack them ahead, go ahead and crack a bunch of them, you can throw them in the freezer and they'll stay good for years. There's a gentleman we met over near St. Louis who he's a dentist, and he bought 15 acres and built a nice house and planted 7 acres of pecan trees.
Mm.
And he put in all the equipment to take care of the trees, and he's got coolers to store the nuts and so on and so forth. And he does very well selling his pecans, and he sells every pecan he can pick up off that 7 acres across the counter in his dentist office. He didn't go to a market. He just sells them at work. Okay. And it amounts to pretty good side money, even for a dentist.
Yeah. Right? That's amazing. Yeah. Just on the side, little side job.
Just
yeah.
A little side, you know, it's a side gig for him, but 7 acres of pecans is a significant amount of pecans.
A lot of nuts. Yeah.
So, for sure. But you know, it's a thing that can be done. I mean, I wish I could just sit here and say, oh yeah, it's a piece of cake. All you do is just throw them over your shoulder and money will come up out of the ground. And you know, it's not that easy, but it is a very effective thing to do.
Sure. It sounds like it. Yeah, for sure. And it sounds like what you're doing is working out well. I mean, you're running a nursery, you know, selling the actual trees too. I mean, I know you don't want competition, but I mean, that's actually, you know, I know a few people who are doing nurseries, and there's a lot of red tape that can be involved in what state you're in and depending on that and stuff. But, you know, it's also an option too, if you want to get into that.
There is some of that. And, you know, I started to do pecans, and everybody told me pecans are hard. And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, they weren't lying. They're hard. You know, a pecan is a hickory tree. It's in the hickory family. And they don't graft very well. They grow slowly. And they don't, the graft unions don't heal. You can graft an apple tree and throw it in the driveway and it'll still grow. I mean, it'll, you know, they're real easy. But hickories have to, and pecans, you know, you've got to pay really close attention to detail to get that to work.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that to discourage anybody. That's just the facts as I've learned them. And
yeah, it's a whole nother thing there that, you know, yeah, it just takes time to, yeah. You put in the time, obviously, that to learn this trade and make a go of it. And yeah, it sounds like it's working out pretty well. I mean, let's talk about your website for a minute. Some of the stuff you're offering for selling. Where do you ship? You ship all over the United States, or what do you do?
I ship into 47 of the lower 48 states. California is uncooperative when it comes to plants. So
I gotcha.
So we can't send anything to California. They have some rules and regulations that don't let me do that. Pecans can't go to Arizona, New Mexico, and 4 counties in West Texas. But the rest of the country, I can send those to. Hickories are the same way. Anything in the Caria family can't go to those areas. Almonds can go pretty much anywhere. The chestnuts, believe it or not, I can't send chestnuts to Louisiana. I don't know why.
Is that right?
and Michigan doesn't let them in. You know, yeah, we send trees all over the country. You know, the trees are, a pecan tree is at least 3 years old by the time it leaves here. And usually sometimes it's 4 years old. Takes them 2 years to get big enough to graft. And then they need to grow another season after that. Hickory's the same way. And we grow in a root pruning container, grow them in a root maker bag that gives us a very good fibrous root system. A pecan tree, if you plant a pecan in the ground, by the time that tree is 2 feet tall, it'll have a 4 foot long taproot, big as your wrist. Mm-hmm. And it won't have hardly any feeder roots on it. It'll just be like a big giant carrot running, growing in the ground.
Is that right?
And if you dig it up, you know, you're going to cut probably half or more of those roots off by the time you get it dug up. And bare root pecan trees just don't survive very well. They just don't do real well. But the container grown thing, I did that because I wanted to have a good quality tree with a good quality root system on it.
Yeah.
And it's worked out pretty well.
Is now a good time to be buying trees? Do you sell all summer, or what do you do? Do you maybe spring and fall, or how do you do that?
It's mostly fall, winter, and spring. Okay. Through the heat of the summer, I mean, if you want to come pick one up, that's fine. But, taking a leafy green tree, putting it in a box, and sticking it inside of a dark brown truck for 4 days.
Gonna be some stress there.
Not a recipe for success. So,
right. Yeah.
When it gets up in the 90s, shipping trees is just not the greatest idea.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, I've had people drive in here, you know, in July and pick up trees and take them home and plant them. If you're willing to water them, you can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've planted trees in the middle of summer and yeah, these require more work for sure. I mean, you definitely have to stay on top of and water them well and just really watch them. And I've even had to provide shade before, you know, put up some shade cloth to kind of help them out a little bit when it's really hot and really sunny, you know,
we've started our fall shipping here just the last 2 weeks and we'll ship on through most of the winter. If we have the polar vortex that everybody's talking about us having this winter, we'll probably hold off when we hit sub-zero. But, you know, as long as it's in the, you know, 20s and 40s, we can ship trees.
So what happens if you buy a tree in the middle of winter? I mean, if you can't dig a hole, if it's certain areas, of course, but what do you do there? I mean, you just hold on to it till spring, or what are you doing?
It's in a pot. Okay.
Okay.
It's in a pot all its life. You want to, you know, put it in a cool place, not outside on the back porch where it's going to freeze, you know, solid, but in a garage or a cool basement, someplace, you know, where it's the temperature is moderated. So the roots don't damage until they get below 7 degrees. Okay. So if you can, even if it freezes solid at 32 degrees, it won't hurt the tree.
Okay. Yeah. I've just never bought a tree in the winter. I've always bought them in the spring or fall. I was kind of wondering what the game plan was there.
Well, I mean, our trees spend the winter outside and, you know, they freeze, you know, as my dad used to say, they freeze harder than Chinese arithmetic. I mean, they freeze solid and, you know, you'll go out there, they're sitting outside. We've thrown a little straw over the top of them and the top of the bag, you could break something on and you pick that tree up, the ground underneath is warm enough to keep the bottom of the bag from freezing.
Yeah.
So I rarely have them freeze all the way through. But yeah, I've had people that bought trees and, you know, things happen. They didn't get them planted. They wound up in a garage or wound up in a cool basement or something all winter long. They planted them in the springtime and they were fine.
Sure. Yeah.
And I've also had people who, you know, hey, you know, my tree died. Okay. Well, you know, can you send me a picture of it? Well, they're still in my garage. I never actually got them planted. that's problematic.
Yeah. I mean, you can't, can't really, make up for everybody's mistakes, I guess.
No,
can you?
no, but, no, the, you know, I've had some people, they had a compost pile, they took the tree, they healed it in the compost pile. It sat in the compost pile all winter long. They pulled it out in the springtime, planted it, it did just fine.
Oh yeah. And producing that little bit of heat in that compost probably really helped it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, bury them in a big pile of leaves, something just to,
sure,
just to keep those roots from freezing. You know, I would love to say that everything worked according to my plan, but nothing ever does here either. So.
Right.
I generally plant here in November, but I've also planted in March and April.
I always think that's so funny. I mean, really, to me, it's always the best. I mean, I feel like fall is just the best time to really plant a tree, but when do all the big box stores and all the people always have trees for sale? You never see them in the fall. You always see them in the spring only.
Well,
around here anyway.
You know, I don't know what it is about us, but we sit all cooped up in the house all winter long, and we're so itching to get outside and do something. We want to plant that garden. So they're just feeding on our desire, yep, to do spring gardening. And the other issue with fall is, you know, it's just now gotten cool here, and, mm-hmm, and sometimes it's hot all the way into October here where, sure, I am. You know, the trees are still growing. If you got to remember, most of what you're going to buy at the big box store is bare root. So if they dig those dudes in August and they don't keep them wet, they're deader than a hammer by the time you get ready to plant them. So
yeah, I've had pretty good success with most of it, but I've had to really baby some of those trees I've bought that way and planted. I mean, you really have to pay attention to them, plant them right, just throw the water at them really heavy for a long while. Really help them out.
Yeah. But the generally people don't think about planting in the fall. They're thinking, right, about other things.
Mm-hmm.
And, but you know, the roots on a tree grow as long as the soil temperature is above 40 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you plant a tree in September or October, and we have an extended fall, you may get two months of root growth on that tree after you plant it, even though it doesn't have any leaves on it.
Right.
And, you know, you get a warm spell in the wintertime, those roots start growing again.
Yeah.
So you're actually doing a pretty good job of extending the growth of the roots on that tree by planting in the fall.
Well, I think that's a good plan. And I think folks should head over to your website, rockbridgetrees.com. I'll have the link in the show notes for that. But you look like you had a nice variety there. Sounds like you're shipping all over the place for most places anyway. Yep. And you got a really good variety of stuff there. I mean, you look like you had, I mean, when we talk about, like, say, pecans or different types, you just had a lot of varieties of things. So
yeah, I've got a lot of variety. Some of them are there for historical reasons. There's some of them are old varieties that've been around a long time, but most of them are good quality nuts that you know anybody would want to grow.
Sure, and I suppose if some folks had a question about what would be best for them, they could reach out to you and on your website and maybe ask you some questions or something before they made a purchase. And
I talk to folks on the phone just about all day, every day.
Yeah. So that's a really good idea, especially if you just real, you know, you're not sure about what maybe be best for your area or what you thought maybe your purposes were, and you could kind of help them maybe think that out or whatever, if you need to do that. And especially if they were going to, you know, make a big purchase and have acres of trees, you want to make the right decision on that, for sure.
They probably want to talk about it a little while before they punch the send button on the order. They really, I have told people that they've made bad choices before. I mean, you don't want a very southern tree, you know, even up there where you are in Indiana.
Right. So, right.
You got to have enough days to ripen the nuts and all that sort of stuff. So,
uh-huh.
We do our best not to let people make mistakes that we can help them from making. So
some of us are stubborn. No, we're just going to hit, you know, we're going to do it ourselves and, you know, just click on that shopping cart and just do it ourselves anyway.
you wouldn't be homesteading if you weren't ornery, right. I'm telling you.
We want to make our mistakes our way and learn from them our way now. We don't want people straightening us out too soon.
Hey, can't do it the hard way. Why do it at all?
That's right. Well, Dave, I sure appreciate you coming on and talking to us about this, because like I said, this is a subject I don't think it's talked about enough. Like you said, nobody's really talking about this on a homestead level, you know, growing these things, doing market gardening with them. You know, I hear a lot of just talk in the permaculture world about, like I said, feeding hogs and doing silvopasture and things like that, but that's really as far as it goes. You know, we're not really talking about as a food source much, you know, and you know, other uses for them. And I think you've definitely sparked some interest in some people's ears by being on here. And I think folks should be planting some nut trees, you know, and yeah, especially if you got a little bit of land, you know, you definitely got some room. They're bigger trees, you know, most of them are big and, you know, take up a lot of space. But when you talk about production, I mean, they're just kind of unmatched, really. You put the time in and you're going to get some production.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And they're a, you know, it's a good long-term investment. I mean, yeah. And that really is what homesteading is all about, is you're investing in a long-term project. You know, we live in a culture that has a very short-term mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people on Monday don't even know what they're going to do on Friday. And, you know, to be very good at homesteading, it's, you know, if you want a slice of bacon for breakfast, it takes about 3 years to get that ready. So, I mean, you know, you've got to be thinking in a longer term, and the tree thing fits right into that. And, you know, that's,
And if you got a property that you know, you can build a legacy with, and something that your grandkids can end up taking care of, man, what is a better investment on that property than nut trees? I mean, that's definitely something really long term.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are chestnut orchards in Spain that have been in the same families for 500 years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So, yeah, I mean, you can do this and you know, your children can benefit, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren can benefit mm-hmm. from something that you do. And it's a really good long-term investment without an overwhelming amount of work every year doing it. So
right yeah, and it's something that, you know, maybe you don't have to do it all at once. Maybe you can just do pieces of it at a time, and, you know, have it come in, some of it come in later if it's too big of an investment early on. But yeah, it'd be a good idea to get as many as you can in early, for sure.
I've been doing this 13 years, and I've got customers who have bought trees for me every year for 13 years.
Yeah, and that's what it takes to really get where you want to be. That's the way to do it, I guess. But, you know, the earlier the better, but you do what you can when you can, right?
Absolutely. Well,
Dave, I appreciate you coming on. It's been great. And I really think folks are going to benefit from this. And I think you just brought a wealth of knowledge to us. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on.